This is the Alkazine Brief on UK Health Radio, your real feel-good radio with Peter Hofland.
In this episode of the Alkazine Brief, I talk with Dr. Ely Benim and Dr. Mark D'Souza. Dr. Benim is Chief Medical Officer and Executive Vice President Development at Sun Alacens. He is also a pediatric oncologist with over 25 years of academic and industry experience developing transformative drugs and devices in oncology. Before joining the company, he was the Chief Medical Officer at Novocure. Dr. D'Souza is President and Chief Executive Officer of the company. He has over 20 years of executive and entrepreneurial experience in the rare disease space. Sun Alacens, the company we're both are working for, was founded to create hope in the face of despair with sonodynamic therapy, or SDT, a non-invasive way to treat and eradicate deadly cancers. I'm Peter Hofland, and this is the Oncozine Brief. The Oncozine Brief is developed in collaboration with our online journal, Oncozine, where you can find additional information and the latest news about cancer, cancer diagnosis and treatment, and cancer prevention. For more information on how to support this program, visit our website at Oncozine. And if you're living in the United States and want to receive our newsletter, text the word cancer to 66866. And we will make sure that you'll receive our newsletter, which includes an overview of the latest news in oncology and hematology.
This is the Oncozine Brief. For the latest news about cancer and cancer treatment, visit our online journal, Oncozine, at www.oncozine.com.
On the phone with me are Dr. Benim and Dr. D'Souza. Dr. Benim is Chief Medical Officer and Executive Vice President Development at Sun Alacens, and Dr. D'Souza is the company's President and Chief Executive Officer. Dr. Benim and Dr. D'Souza, welcome to the Oncozine Brief. Now, let me start with you, Dr. D'Souza. Before we come to talk about the novel therapeutic approaches the company is developing, tell me a little bit about yourself.
Well, thank you, Peter. I'm Mark D'Souza. I'm a biochemist by training. And I've been on the business side of the biotech industry for over 20 years. I started my career at a company called Dyax. I spent 10 years there. And Dyax was founded by a gentleman who was one of the founders of Genzyme that really pioneered the development of first-in-class drugs for rare genetic diseases. And when I was at Dyax, I was part of a team that actually developed two drugs for a rare genetic disease called hereditary angioedema. Then I went on to do a number of other companies also in the rare disease space. Some of those were in the rare skin cancer space. And at two of those companies, I met Stuart Marcus, who was my consulting chief medical officer in two of these rare skin cancer companies. And Stuart introduced me to the idea of sonodynamic therapy, which is what Sun Alacens is developing as a new modality to treat cancer. My interests in my career have really focused on three things, really. First-in-class science. Secondly, translating that science into clinically meaningful results for patients. And the third thing is a world-class set of founders and experienced drug developers. And we've done all those three things at Sun Alacens. So we're looking to develop our technology that's a non-invasive way to treat cancer into a new way to treat brain tumors and eventually tumors outside the brain, and look forward to talking more about that today.
Dr. Ely Benim, tell me about yourself.
Thank you, Peter. I'm Ely Benim, and I'm the Chief Medical Officer. I'm a pediatric hematologist oncologist by training, specialized in stem cell transplantation. I was for 12 years at St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, but I did a lot of clinical research in cells, drugs, and device, and later moving into industry. So I have over 25 years of clinical research in drug development and drug and device combination development. So since I was a little kid that wanted to take care of kids with cancer and went to train to one of the top places in the world, stayed there in the faculty, and when I moved to industry with the intention to move discoveries and new therapies for patients with cancer, pediatrics and adult, in a much faster way that we could have done it in the academic world. So my career has been in many different companies develop, like I said, compounds, drugs, cell therapy, and drug device combinations to treat really the most complicated and what I like to call the more catastrophic type of cancers. My previous company, it's a company based on treating brain tumors called Novocure. When I was there, the chief medical officer, and I moved into Sonalysis, where I found a very interesting cutting-edge technology to treat cancer in a completely new way. So I felt that this is the company that can make difference in how patients are treated with very bad, terrible solid tumor.
Now, one thing I noticed is that the company is not just saying it is trying to change the treatment of patients diagnosed with cancer, but you're actually eradicating cancers, including diseases like glioblastoma or high-grade gliomas and other forms of brain cancer. Tell me a little bit more about this, Dr. Benning.
This therapy, it is a completely different way of treating patients. Usually, especially patients with brain tumor, even the initial presentation many times is already devastating, right? With many neurological deficits for these patients. And the first line of therapy is surgery. So basically, open the brain, to open the head, and go after the tumor. And most of these tumors are not round, nice, clean golf ball. These are tumors that really infiltrate into the brain parenchyma. And it is very hard to be able, with surgery, to take the whole tumor. And unfortunately, what happens is that the tumor recurs. So usually what they usually therapy is to do surgery first, then radiation, then chemotherapy. Usually that's where you then sit and wait to see what happens. So our therapy, and I will let Mark talk more about the development of this technology, but our therapy is really a neurosurgical approach using an IV formulation of a drug that has been used for a long time for selecting the tumors for surgery. But our technique allows to treat those tumors directly without having to invade the skull. So no surgery, and we use ultrasound waves to activate a substance that eventually damaged the cancer cells and not the normal cells. Basically, this is a surgery without a scalpel.
That's a fine way to describe it, Eli. As you mentioned, Peter, surgery is one option. One non-invasive option that's currently being used is radiation therapy. But it comes with tremendous and debilitating side effects. And what we hope to do with our non-invasive sonodynamic therapy is to treat the tumor and kill the tumor selectively without affecting normal tissue. Radiation, has bystander effects as well and doesn't just kill the tumor, but can have effects on healthy tissue as well. And that's what leads to some of the side effects. So what we hope to do is to use our non-invasive procedure to treat brain tumors without affecting normal tissue. And the early data we have shows that we have a encouraging and well-tolerated procedure. And you know, obviously, with chemotherapy that there's significant side effects as well. We don't see that with our therapy.
So when you look at chemotherapy, our body's defenses, the blood-brain barrier, makes it very difficult for chemotherapy to be effective or even work. It simply doesn't pass through to where it needs to be. Your approach is different and is not hampered by the blood-brain barrier. Can you tell me a little bit more about this, Dr. D'Souza?
So what sonodynamic therapy is, it's a drug-device combination. The drug is actually a nutrient that tumors need, actually any oxygen-consuming cell needs. And it's only a small molecule. It's only a 5-carbon molecule. So there are no issues whatsoever with penetration of the blood-brain barrier. Our drug readily crosses the blood-brain barrier and is taken up by tumor cells in far greater amounts than normal cells. And tumor cells very selectively convert our drug into a compound that is activated by the ultrasound to blow up the tumor cell. Normal cells do not accumulate this compound. And that's why when the ultrasound is given, the ultrasound does not have an effect on normal cells. That's a specificity of sonodynamic therapy.
And so the small drug that you give a patient or that you have is taken up by the cells, right? But then it is changed in something else that has no place in healthy cells. Is that correct?
That's exactly right.
And then with further treatment, it basically eradicates cancers.
So you can think of this nutrient I referred to being converted into a smart bomb by the ultrasound.
Let's take a short break, and then we're back with Dr. Eli Ben-Aim and Dr. Mark D'Souza.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Love and laugh. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Kiss me quick. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
Strawberries and cream.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
The station that makes you feel good.
This is the Oncozine Brief on UK Health Radio, your real feel-good radio with Peter Hofland.
And welcome back. In today's episode of the Oncozine Brief, I'm talking with Dr. Eli Ben-Aim and Dr. Mark D'Souza. I'm Peter Hofland, and this is the Oncozine Brief. One of the centers dedicated to find a cure for brain cancer in the next decade is the Ivy Brain Tumor Center at Barrow Neurological Institute here in Phoenix, Arizona. The center personalizes brain tumor therapy, where the molecular underpinnings of each unique patient dictate their course of treatment. And patients come to the Ivy Brain Tumor Center from around the world to gain access to its array of clinical trials, finding treatment options when they actually are being told that there is no hope for them and that there is no treatment option for them. The team of Dr. Nader Sinai, the center's director of neurological oncology, established a proof of concept for what you are developing or what you have developed, right? This proof of concept was based on a phase 0-2 trial. Now, tell me a little bit more about this proof of concept and the 0-2 trial, because I think some of our listeners may not necessarily know what a 0-2 trial is.
So this was what the Ivy did, which is right. It was a study, we'll call it phase 0 and then phase 1. So it was two studies in one. Again, we administered the Ivy drug, you know, this nutrient 5-ALA, and then the patients received the sonodynamic therapy. When we want to talk about phase 0, these are studies to learn about the biology response to a tumor. So the objective is not to cure the patient, correct? The objective is to learn the activity of a drug, a therapy, biologically in a patient. And a phase one is when you want to learn how a drug is distributed through the body after it's given. As you know, many drugs have to be absorbed. They go through the liver, they go through the kidneys. So we need to learn how the drug gets distributed in the body. In the case of an IV drug, we look, obviously it's not taken by mouth, but it also goes through a process of getting used and discarded by the body. So there's something called pharmacokinetics, you know, from movement of the drug through the body. So we do what we call PK or pharmacokinetics to learn how the drug is uptake by the body, by the different cells, and how it's to, you know, metabolized and released. In this case, what was very interesting, and this is that phase zero part, is Dr. Sinai took 10 patients with recurrent glioblastoma, so patients that have had already the standard of care and have recurred, and were candidates for second surgeries. These patients then receive a few hours before 5-ALA, our compound, and then they were treated with sonodynamic therapy. The phase zero component was that the patients only received treatment on half of the tumor. So patient got IV of the 5-ALA, but since this is a focus ultrasound, the patients all received treatment on half of the tumor, while the other half didn't receive any treatment. And then those patients, 4 days later, will have their plan already resection. Okay, and this is why this is called a phase zero. The therapy really was not given with the idea of having a long-term effect on the patient, although, as was presented at the Society of Neuro-Oncology meeting, some of these patients did have a prolonged survival. But in our case, the objective of the study was to look at the tumor 4 days after they treated only half of the tumor. So 4 days later, Dr. Sinai went now to have the regular surgery, extirp or took out the whole tumor. And remember, we knew half of the tumor was treated with sonodynamic therapy, the other half wasn't. And when we look and did studies to allow us to see different, what we call biomarkers of cell death. So these are biochemical studies that we do on the tumor that indicates if death is already happening into the tumor. We found that there were two more common markers that we know had to deal with cell death were statistically significant elevated on the half that was treated compared to the half that was not treated. So this is what the phase zero told us, that we already very early, you know, 4 days after the therapy, there was already biochemical changes on the half of the tumor due to the sonodynamic therapy. So in conclusion, each patient served as its own control. So half that was treated and the other half that was not treated. And we could show that difference in between the two halves and show that part of the tumor that was treated already show signs of self-death compared to the untreated side. That was the phase zero. And the therapy was very well tolerated. At the same time that we gave that IV drug, we took samples of the patients to measure the pharmacokinetics, and we learned how to give this drug before the sonodynamic therapy and how it's eliminated by the body. So this combination of the data of initial biochemical efficacy, the safety of the procedure, and the pharmacokinetics of the drug that were given, that allows then to conclude that there was activity, safety, and a product that was stable. It was distributed in an expected way. And that's where we moved in now with the current study, or the two current studies, one in a pediatric tumor called the IPG, and again in recurrent glioblastoma patients. But now this was based on the activity and the drug doses that we saw at Dr. Sanaya's place.
Right. So in this phase 0-2 study, you're testing if an approach works. You mentioned that half of the brain tumor received treatment, while the other side did not. Tell me a little bit more about this.
So remember, these patients already got the standard of care for the newly diagnosed patients. So now the patients completed, they have the initial therapy, the initial surgery, the initial radiation, the initial chemotherapy. Sometime later, patient comes for a checkup and has again the tumor. So these are recurring tumors. So they were treated for the standard of care at the beginning, and they are going to go for surgery again. So that's when we came in. So the standard, the patients still received the standard in the sense that they had the surgery. But before the surgery, we did the sonodynamic therapy half and half. And when the tumor came out after the regular standard of care, the surgery the patient had planned, is when we saw the difference. So we did not compare to standard of therapy. What we evaluated in the same patient was the efficacy of the therapy in half of the tumor compared to the other half of the tumor. So there was no risk for the patient that we were giving something that was not proven, because at the end, the only proven therapy that this patient were planned to get was, again, another surgery, which just came before the surgery. This therapy took advantage that the tumor was coming out to look into the biochemical changes after we did the sonodynamic therapy.
In this 0-2 study, outcomes were already seen after a very short period of just 4 days. After the conclusion of the initial study, were you able to continue treating patients?
Correct. So as I mentioned, you know, the phase 0 objective and phase 1 is really to look into phase 0 to look at biochemical responses, which we obtain, and phase 1 is safety and look at the distribution of the body, of the drug through the body. So in general, those patients are not set up to look for really long-term efficacy. But as I mentioned, there's already some presentation, although the publication hasn't come out yet, that there was some patients that have long-term responses. What we're doing now is doing a phase 1, phase 2 study, right, where we are confirming the safety and the drug distribution, the PK, in patients with GBM, with recurrent GBM. And then we're expanding to a phase 2. And that's when, in a phase 2, is when you look at efficacy and you have what they call endpoints of efficacy, like overall survival, how long did it take to the tumor to come back, if that's the case. So the objectives of the phase 0s, phase 1, really, even though we like to know and it's great to hear if a patient responded, that's not the objective of phase 0, phase 1. Phase 2, which is where we're conducting right now, it is where we are, what we call powering the study. What does that mean? We need to have enough patients to show statistically that the response is caused by the therapy they were given and not by chance. And this is part of doing clinical trials, and that's where a phase 2 is. And eventually, in a phase 3, you will compare your therapy that looked positive in a phase 2 and then compare it to the standard of care. And again, you have to show statistically significant difference in between the control or standard of care group and the experimental arm that has this new therapy. And that's when new therapies get approved by the FDA. So we are right now in that phase 2. And so far, we are starting. We have to wait to see the results of the study. But we already have a show in the IPG in children that we started treating for this terrible disease, that the safety is very good. We haven't seen any side effects on the children that have been treated with this. Again, the first 10 patients that were treated in Phoenix also didn't show any side effects.
Let's take a short break, and then we're back with Dr. Eli Ben-Im and Dr. Mark D'Souza.
Sarcoma. Odds are you've never heard that word before. For the 40 people diagnosed with sarcoma every day, it is a life-changing word. Because sarcoma is cancer. Through awareness, advocacy, and research, the Sarcoma Foundation of America is bringing hope to the families whose lives have been turned upside down by a cancer they had never heard of until diagnosis. Please join us in the fight to find the cure for sarcoma. For more information on the work of the Sarcoma Foundation of America, go to curesarcoma.org.
This is the Oncozine Brief on UK Health Radio, your real feel-good radio, with Peter Hofflin.
And welcome back. In today's episode of the Oncozine Brief, I'm talking with Dr. Eli Ben-Im and Dr. Mark D'Souza. I'm Peter Hofflin, and this is the Oncozine Brief. Now, in these early studies, you're dealing with recurring cancers, right? And for these patients, it's not the first time that they are diagnosed with glioblastoma or any other form of brain cancer. Does that make a difference in terms of development of a particular approach?
So the issue is, in general, let me go back into GBM. So GBM in general, and many cancers where they recur, have very bad prognosis. That means that usually the results are worse than when they're newly diagnosed. And this is because the patient already have received a lot of therapies, had created resistance. You know, the cancers are very smart. They create resistance through different mechanisms, including other chromosomal mutations or mutations of the tumor, and make the cells resistant to new therapies. So in general, happens many times that many tumors, they don't have many more things to offer after they recur. Some others, and this is when you hear patients in first line, that's when they are newly diagnosed, get certain therapy. Then when they go to, they recur, they may get a second line. And rarely there's some cancers that may get a third line that are already approved. In general, for second or third line, many times patients go into clinical trial. The way that the regulations are written, it's in a way that we need to protect the patients, correct? And there has to be a beneficence, has to be a benefit of the patient of getting an experimental therapy. So we need to be sure that we don't take away from the standard of care, that we don't give a suboptimal therapy with a patient when there's already a therapy that already has a benefit on the patient. So in general, in cancer, we treat patients in recurrence because there's not that many therapies available. So it is ethical to approach these patients and treat them with the new therapies. To treat a first line patient, you generally have to demonstrate in recurrent disease that there is activity to then take the risk of bring the therapy earlier with the chance that you may be given a suboptimal therapy compared to the standard of care. But, you know, in our case, you know, our therapy really, it's more of a neurosurgical technique without the scalpel because we are giving a nutrient to the body and then coming out and doing surgery without opening the brain, without giving side effects, and then potentially, you know, having a great benefit to the patient. So the development plan is really to try to have enough data soon in these recurrent diseases to bring this therapy earlier in the patients before they get radiation, before they get chemotherapy, even before they have to have major surgeries, and try to see if we can treat these patients, take control of the tumor, eradicate the tumor, and before or not give any more therapy after. So that's basically the development plan. And one more thing about this therapy, it is since we're giving a nutrient to the body that is only taken or is mostly taken by the tumor cells, which they cannot survive without it, then the chances of having create resistance are very low. While other chemotherapies or other therapies will create resistance when they create new mutations. For us, it is not it doesn't affect our therapy if the patient has a mutation or not, because our therapy treats patients that are rapidly dividing like the cancer cells. So any cell that reproduces very quickly is going to require a lot of 5-ALA and is going to be susceptible to sonodynamic therapy.
To clarify, patients are receiving a particular drug which is followed by a radiologic or ultrasound approach. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is the case. Since the cells cannot keep producing a protein, it's called heme, that carries oxygen inside the cell, it accumulates this, what we call protoporphyrin 9 or PP9. So it's the cell, the malignant cells by itself, creates the cell, that it, the product that is susceptible to the sonodynamic therapy, while the normal cells don't accumulate this protoporphyrin 9 on this cell. So the same machinery, what I call the gluttony of the cells. We feed the cells for them to produce these their own smart cells, to commit basically gastronomic suicide, I will call, where they get eventually, you know, the sonodynamic therapy will kill the product of their own gluttony.
That is a very interesting approach because it makes treatment also much safer, right? Now, Dr. D'Souza, one of the doctors using this approach is Dr. Mitchell Berger at UCSF Brain Tumor Center in San Francisco. He made a very interesting statement suggesting that the potential for this treatment, the treatment that you're developing, could turn glioblastoma from a lethal disease to a manageable chronic disease. If you draw a parallel with breast cancer, I think 30 to 40 years ago, metastatic breast cancer was very difficult to treat, and in most cases, not really or hardly survivable. But things have changed, and metastatic breast cancer can be treated effectively. Is this something that you're trying to accomplish in the treatment of brain cancer?
Yeah, that's right. That's a great parallel that you draw over there from breast cancer. You know, Dr. Berger, who's chair of our scientific advisory board, you know, has stated this really our vision statement. You know, we are still in clinical trials, but what we are doing to try and achieve that vision is to retreat patients. And that's what we've just started doing, is not just treat patients once, but to keep treating them to keep their tumor at bay. You know, I'm under no illusion that we will have a cure, but if we can keep retreating patients to give patients a decent quality of life and turn them into survivors, that's certainly well worth doing.
In 2019, I interviewed a patient who, at the time, was a 25-year survivor of metastatic breast cancer. And today, she is still a patient with metastatic breast cancer receiving treatment. But her health-related quality of life is okay, and she's able to be living a fulfilling life. Is that something that you're trying to accomplish in brain cancer?
That's right. I think the bar is high in recurrent glioblastoma. But as Ellie said, eventually, you know, the right paradigm is to treat early. And maybe I'll turn it over to him here to add anything, since he has treated a lot of patients with these conditions.
Yeah, I think that in the case of GBM, it is true. It is especially patients who have recurrent disease. But one of the things that our therapy has the potential of really decrease the size of the tumor, correct? Not only keep the tumor from growing. And so the hope is that reducing the tumor will also improve the quality of life, because remember, a lot of these patients have some neurological symptoms that, you know, they may have paralysis, they may have seizures, they may have weaknesses that may eventually get better after tumor reduction, correct? You can imagine a tumor growing around a bundle of nerves that serve a function and then having sort of a release. So the hope is not only make it chronic, but also improve the quality of life. And one of the things, though, a lot of therapies in recurrent diseases, they really hamper, they really make worse the quality of life, right? So a lot of patients that go for second or third line therapies, you know, their quality of life really gets affected. By the hand, if I may, you know, we treat another type of cancer in children. And in children, you know, I'm a pediatric oncologist by training. We really look more into curing disease than making it chronic, right? Because and if you see in general, pediatric cancers are curable compared to adult. And this is due to the biology of the tumors. Pediatric cancers in general, they grow very fast compared to the adults. And that's why prevention doesn't work very well in children, because they happen and grow very, very fast compared to, for example, a colorectal cancer that can be picked up by a colonoscopy, or a prostate cancer that start be checking out by PSA or a physical exam. So in pediatrics, in which we're already treating patients with the terrible brain tumor, we have the potential not only to make this tumor, you know, control this tumor, but my hope as a pediatric oncology is really to have major tumor reduction with the potential on long-term survival. Patients with the IPG, most of them die in between 9.5 to 11 months. They only like 2 to 3% survive a 2 years. So if we can start long-term survivals, it will be great with these patients. And I do think that any therapy that shows promise in the IPG has the potential of cure. Remember, we started treating monthly with these patients, so we expect more responses. And potentially there may be combinations in the future of different therapies that will help these pediatric patients. So as I said, in Mark says in GBM, you know, the bar is very high, especially in recurrent GBM. And, you know, we would love to make this a chronic disease. But in pediatrics, I will be a little bit more optimistic on the results that we eventually could have.
Let's take a short break, and then we're back with Dr. Eli Ben-Im and Dr. Mark D'Souza.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living. We've been doing this for over 40 years. Every year, more and more people are living satisfying lives completely cruelty-free. Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
This is the Oncozine Brief on UK Health Radio, your real feel-good radio with Peter Hofflin.
And welcome back. In today's episode of the Oncozine Brief, I'm talking with Dr. Eli Ben-Im and Dr. Mark D'Souza. I'm Peter Hofland, and this is the Oncozine Brief. Now, you've chosen to treat very difficult cancers like glioblastoma. But looking at your pipeline, I understand that you're trying to adapt the technology to many different forms of cancer, not only brain cancer. Dr. D'Souza, tell me a little bit about this approach and where it may take you on the long run.
That's exactly right. We see sonodynamic therapy as a platform technology. We chose to start with these brain tumors, glioblastoma and diffuse intrinsic pontine glioma, the pediatric cancer, because we know they take up our drug, 5-ALA, in high amounts compared to normal cells. Indeed, an oral form of ALA is approved to image brain tumors, image high-grade gliomas prior to surgery. So we knew that the drug gets there. So we started there. We know from prior work from our scientific founder and others that a number of different carcinomas outside the brain take up 5-ALA similarly in high amounts. That includes conditions such as pancreatic carcinoma and others. So we have the potential to treat a number of different cancers outside the brain, and we're just in the stages of exploring sonodynamic therapy and working with key opinion leaders to prioritize these cancers outside the brain. So the idea is that we wish to prove the concept of sonodynamic therapy. And with Dr. Sanai's pioneering study, that was the first clinical study ever done in man with sonodynamic therapy. We plan to continue with our own studies in recurrent glioblastoma, in DIPG, and eventually in newly diagnosed glioblastoma, and then expand outside the brain into tumors such as pancreatic carcinoma and other cancers outside the brain to really prove that this is a platform.
So that makes it, again, very interesting in terms of potential of these treatment options. Dr. Banim, can you tell me a little bit about the possibility of this platform and the treatment options beyond brain cancer?
I love when Mark, you know, brought up, you know, how to view this therapies. You have to understand when you treat in the brain, there are certain limitations, right? There's a skull. You have to go through some type of MRI machine, use the ultrasound. It's a little more complicated. There's some terrible diseases, and you know, we pick very well because they do have a high uptake of 5-ALA. But when you go outside the brain, Eric, you know, imagine that now you're talking with an ultrasound that you handle by hand instead of an MRI, right? So now this is where can we use this technology, right? And so you say, well, I, you know, ultrasound of the abdomen, where can I treat this? Oh, I know where the pancreas is. I know how to treat it. Now that ultrasound technology is very advanced, it can differentiate millimeters of any organ anywhere in the body. So bladder cancer, correct? And so if this is eventually, you know, there's no toxicity. We're talking here at very low intensity ultrasound waves, you know, like you do for a pregnant woman or an echocardiogram. So you can, the vision, if you want, the sci-fi vision, if you want, you know, can you imagine giving IV 5-ALA and then going with your handheld ultrasound machine and going through different parts of the body and killing cells that have an increased uptake of 5-ALA, which will be the malignant cells and not the normal cells, right? So the potential of going almost in any organ in most types of cancer is incredible. So obviously we have to prove this. We have to prove it in the brain, and there is already some activity that works. But it is a platform where we have to go outside and try to treat cancers that, again, has a high uptake of ALA. This therapy has been used before. Right? The therapy has been used for skin cancers, where a cream has been placed on pre-malignant or malignant cells in the skin, and then a blue light has been given. If you go to dermatology offices, you probably have seen this blue light on a corner that you see there, and you get the blue light. So this therapy has been proven already outside the brain. And the one who did this was our founder, Stuart Marcus, that had that company that showed that. So we know this work outside the brain. We just now want to use it in other places. So our plans in the future is really to advance the platform in multiple type of cancer. And that's obviously we'll need the support of the community and the scientific community to, you know, really prioritize where to go. And we're going to go, obviously, where the patient, the therapy is needed the most. So obviously that's why we also go sometimes to the worst cancers like DIPG and GBM.
Well, this sounds not only futuristic, but very exciting and brings hope for people that are diagnosed with cancer, even hard to treat cancers like glioblastoma. In conclusion, when you say that in the future, there will be a handheld device doctors can use to treat patients, would this be potentially in a GP's office, or is this always the realm of an oncologist? What are you expecting?
I suspect the latter, actually, that you know this will still be in the realm of a specialist with each of the organs that we wind up treating.
Yeah, I agree, but we're not that far away to having that device to be in the oncologist's office or the urologist's office. So that's not that far away. We're already in the process of looking into having that device and conduct clinical trials in that. But eventually, we hope that to have really a futuristic therapy that will not have side effects, that will be easier to give, and that could be, you know, repeated until the treatment is effective, and that will have low risk for recurrence, right? For having resistance to the therapy. One more thing that I would like to see on this therapy, Craig, it is that even though we know how to give it, and eventually there will be very strict parameters on how to, you know, these ultrasound waves get to the tumor, each patient will receive a very personalized therapy, because this therapy will be, this ultrasound will be tailored, every therapy, to the characteristics and the size and the response of the tumor, which is different than getting, for example, radiation therapy, where you're still going to get radiation. Maybe you'll move, there's some response. Maybe the area where it's going to be treated with the radiation will be a little different, but the patient will still get the same amount of radiation. Or if you're getting chemotherapy and there's response of the chemotherapy, you're not going to change the dose of the chemotherapy. You're going to still be given the same dose. In our case, we personalize this to the response, because the sound waves and how things get activated will have to be different in between each time, how the patient's responds. So I will say this is one of the uniqueness of our platform.
Well, with that very positive conclusion, Dr. Eli Benim and Dr. Mark D'Souza, thank you so much for joining me in the Oncogene Brief today. It was a delight to hear about some of the really interesting therapies that are right now in development and where we might be able to go in the future. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you, Peter.
In this episode of the Oncogene Brief, I spoke with Dr. Eli Benim and Dr. Mark D'Souza. Dr. Benim is Chief Medical Officer and Executive Vice President Development at Sona Lessence. He is also a pediatric oncologist with over 25 years of academic and industry experience developing transformative drugs and devices in oncology. Before joining Sona Lessence, he was the Chief Medical Officer at Novocure. Dr. D'Souza is President and Chief Executive Officer of Sona Lessence. He has over 20 years of executive and entrepreneurial experience in the rare disease space. Now, Sona Lessence was founded to create hope in the face of despair with sonodynamic therapy, a non-invasive way to treat and eradicate deadly cancers like high-grade gliomas that typically require debilitating brain surgery that often leads to tumor recurrence. For more information about Sona Lessence, please visit the company's website at www.sonalessence.com. For more information about the studies presented in this program, please go to our online journal, Oncogene, at oncogene.com. I'm Peter Hoffland, and this is the Oncogene Brief. For us here at the Oncogene Brief, we want to thank you, our listeners, sponsors, and advertisers, for your ongoing support. Your support makes it possible that you can hear this program via PRX, Public Radio Exchange, and in the United Kingdom and mainland Europe via UK Health Radio. And you can also download our program via podcast and streaming media, including iTunes, Spotify, Audible, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and nearly anywhere you can find a podcast. For more information about sponsoring the Oncogene Brief, visit our website at oncogene@oncogene.com. If you are living in the United States and want to receive our newsletter, text the word cancer, that is C-A-N-C-E-R, to 66866, that is 66866, and we will make sure that you'll receive our newsletter, which includes an overview of the latest news in oncology and hematology. Thank you all, and thank you for listening. And join us again for our next episode. I'm Peter Hoffland, and this is the Oncogene Brief.
The Oncogene Brief is a global medical educational service from the publishers of Oncogene and ADC Review, the Journal of Antibody Drug Conjugates. Support for the Oncogene Brief comes from our commercial underwriters and advertisers and the listeners to this station. For more information about advertising, underwriting, and sponsoring options, visit Oncogene at www.oncogene.com/podcasts. The Oncogene Brief contains health and medicine-related information and is provided for educational and entertainment purposes only. The content in this program is not intended as a substitute for professional medical or health advice and does not replace your doctor's advice and guidance. Your doctor is the best person to answer questions about your personal health. If you hear something in this program that doesn't agree with what your doctor has told you, ask him or her about it.